I read this story, and I found it easier to read this story than tell you something embarrassing about myself. But I can relate to this story. It's about a middle-aged and intensely modest woman who is planning to spend her summer vacation with her husband at a campground that they'd never been to before. So they had no information. This was in the days that you actually wrote letters on paper and used snail mail to get it to its intended target. So they couldn't get online and Google it and find out the pictures of the place and what the campground looked like. And what really concerned this lady, as sensitive as she was, she didn't want to be prepared, especially when it came to discovering what the washroom facilities were like. She was very concerned, and that was just kind of one of her quirks, one of who she was. So she starts writing this letter to ask the question. And when she wrote the word toilet in the letter, she had a problem with that. It just seemed too bold for her sense of propriety. So she changed toilet to the old-fashioned term bathroom commode. So she wrote bathroom commode, and she crumpled the paper up and threw it out and grabbed another one. Thought, that's just still too bold for me and for my liking. So she decided to abbreviate bathroom commode and simply used the letters BC. So this was the question that she wrote to the campground manager. Does the campground have its own BC? Simple, right? Do you have a toilet or don't you have a toilet? So when the campground manager reads the sentence, he has no idea what this woman is talking about. He wrestles with it, he thinks about it, he does the acronym thing, has no idea, so he talks to the staff and they can't help him figure it out. And finally, he has this aha moment. He figures it out. He finally decides that she must be talking about whether or not the campground has its own Baptist church. Bathroom, Baptist church. So this is the letter that he wrote to this lady. Dear madam, I regret very much the delay in answering your letter, but I now take the pleasure of informing you that a BC is located 9 miles to the north of the campground. It is capable of seating 250 people at a time. I admit that it's quite a distance away if you're in the habit of going regularly, but no doubt you will be pleased to know that a great number of people take their lunches along and make a complete day of it. They usually arrive early and stay late. Focus with me here. The last time my wife and I went was 6 years ago. It was so crowded that we had to stand up the whole time. I have to say it pains me not to go more often, but it is surely for no lack of desire on my part. However, as we grow older, it seems to be more of an effort. If you decide to come down to our campground, perhaps I could go with you for the first time. I'd be glad to sit with you and introduce you to all the other people. We want you to know that this is a very friendly campground. I am pretty sure that this lady and her husband never went to the campground. But if they did, I think that both she and the camp manager would wish that they could have started their conversation over and that they would have had more clarity, more understanding in their communication. I relate to that because I have said things and get deer in the headlights look. It's so easy to not do it right. There are a lot of times, and I wish I would have had another chance, but I'm afraid that a lot of what I've said over the years was certainly hard to understand, and to me, it's kind of like this quote that I found. The quote says this, "I know you believe you understand what you think I said, but I'm not sure you realize what you heard is not what I meant." I'm not even going to repeat it, because it's just confusing. And I know I can be confusing with people, from my children to my wife to people in church, when I'm having conversations with them. It's like, So, every one of us knows what it is like to say things that lead to misunderstanding and to be misunderstood. We know what that's like. We've also experienced communication directed toward us that was confusing, unhelpful, sometimes even that was hurtful, and all the while, sometimes coming from people who had no clue that it was having that kind of an effect on us. No clue. We're walking away wounded. They're walking away thinking that was a great conversation. And we missed something. Something was wrong in the understanding. So I want to give you some simple logic this morning about communication. I like simple. It's helpful for me that way. Poor communication, first of all, is a problem. That just makes sense. I read of a poor guy working in the pharmacy. The pharmacist is in the back of his establishment, and this small explosion occurs while he's in the back. And he walks out, his face is black, smudges all over it, his white coat is tattered, staggers up to the woman customer, and he said to her, "Would you mind having your doctor write out the prescription again? This time have him print it." This isn't good. 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 15 and 16. I love this verse. He says, "This is what our beloved brother Paul also wrote to you with the wisdom God gave to him, speaking of these things in all of his letters." He's talking about something that's normal conversation in the life of the church, and Paul is the guy that does amazing things with his writings. Then he says this, "Some of his comments are very hard to understand, and those who are ignorant and unstable have twisted his letters to mean something quite different, just as they do with other parts of Scripture." When I read certain parts of letters that Paul wrote, like Romans, I find them very hard to understand. Old things are rarely new again. It's always the same, but there's confusion. It's not always easy to understand other people's conversations. I like the couple of analogies that Paul uses in 1 Corinthians 14. He says, "Even lifeless instruments like the flute or the harp must play the notes clearly, or no one will recognize the melody. And if the bugler doesn't sound a clear call, how will the soldiers know they're being called to battle?" Clear communication, understandable communication. Poor communication leads at least to misunderstanding. It may mean that you don't get the intended result if you don't communicate clearly. Do it enough and people won't trust you because they just can't rely on what you're saying because they don't get it. Poor communication could result in a missed deadline or making the wrong decision or showing up at the wrong place or the wrong time because we didn't pay attention enough and the understanding wasn't there. So poor communication can be problematic. Second piece of logic, good communication is important. I would underline that and circle it. To me, it's just huge. It's important. It's true in all of our connections and relationships with people. What you see needs to make sense. It needs to say what you mean and mean what you say. It's logical. Here are some helpful words for those of you in a significant relationship with someone else. The author that wrote this is talking to married couples, telling them how to be healthier. I think it applies to it can apply to relationships in general. Here's the advice. Communication means that you should never make your partner guess at how you are feeling or what you are thinking. In other words, especially for us poor husbands, please don't make us try to guess what's going on in your mind because we won't figure it out. Communication means that you should never make your partner guess at how you are feeling or what you are thinking. This is just good communication. The Apostle James gives to me some of the greatest insight into good communication. "Understand this," he says, "my brothers and sisters," in James 1:19. "You must be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry." Great advice. If I would paraphrase it and it got published someday, this would be how I would put it. You must be able to be quick to listen up, shut up, and lighten up. In other words, get the ears working, learn when to zip it, and just relax a little bit before you react. Third piece of advice, understanding is necessary for good communication. Jesus said this in Matthew 5:10. He was talking to the crowd, and he said, "Listen and try to understand. It's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. You are defiled by the words that come out of your mouth." So you could focus for a while on the words that come out of your mouth. That's talking about communication as well. But I want you to understand what that word "understand" means. It literally means to put something together and make sense of it. And the image literally has this sense of taking pieces and assembling them into something that's recognizable. It's the perfect image. I was going to bring one with me, but I didn't have the time to do that. It's like somebody handing you a bag with 1,000 puzzle pieces in it and saying, "Go at it," but there's no picture. Communication is like that. We have all kinds of pieces, but we don't know the full picture. And most of us, we would look at the box and start to work away at it. The people that do it right are the ones that always start with the outside. Other ones, they'll start with flower or something else. I'm just teasing. Everybody has their own way. When I lived in Alberta, it took me 4 years to realize that God was working in my life in Alberta. And by the fifth year, and by a second, or the year after I came back home, I looked at Alberta and I could see that God was piecing my life together into this puzzle that I recognized. And I wished I would have paid more attention. I still want to go back and chronicle what that looked like. But all kinds of amazing things that God was doing, one piece at a time, and bit by bit, I started to see a picture that ultimately is still being put together. And West Heights is one of those pictures in my puzzle. And the puzzle is beautiful because it's the thread of God's work in my life. Understanding means putting the pieces of what you're hearing together to make sense of something. That's as core as it can be. So my example of more understanding in our communication this morning is of the conversation that Jesus had with an unnamed woman at Jacob's well in Sychar. Jesus was exhausted from his trek through the hot desert, gets to Jacob's well, and he sits down while the disciples go and get some takeout lunch from the village next door. And the question I'd like to probe this morning is, how do we get or achieve more understanding in our communication? So I want to suggest three ingredients of good communication. The first is motivation. This is the reason why we communicate with people. There's always a reason why. Sometimes it's not good. Sometimes it's reactionary. Sometimes it's not helpful to people. Sometimes it backfires and comes back to haunt us. We communicate because we want others typically to learn or to know something. That's kind of the core of why we communicate. We want somebody to know or to learn something. Proverbs 16:21, Solomon says, "The wise are known for their understanding, and pleasant words are persuasive." Pleasant words motivate somebody to do something, to learn something, to get somewhere. So the purpose of the goal here is to transfer knowledge or information or instructions or emotions or something. But it's intended for them to get it and to understand it. We also communicate because we want to add value to other people's lives. I would use words like mentoring or coaching. Some way that we can interact with people that helps them grow and become who God has intended them to be. It might be a skill set. It could be knowledge about how to do something or to change something. But it's that kind of adding value to people's lives that brings some substance to them. Paul says this in Ephesians 4:29. He says, "Don't use foul or abusive language," which again, set as its own category, is counterproductive, is not beneficial. "Let everything you say be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them." They're good, they're beneficial, they're helpful. They will enrich their life as you speak to them, as you invest in their life. So if I would put all that together, I'd say the greatest way to add value to people's lives and the ultimate motivation for communication is for life change. That you could do something to inspire them to grow, to help them out of a habit that's destructive, whatever it would be. And sometimes that means the choice to invest in a journey with someone. I rekindled through another person's initiative about 3 months ago, a connection with someone that I had mentored probably 9 years ago now. That was the end of the mentoring time. 4 years of college life, when I was at Crossroads, we got together almost every week. We went through books. We chewed on stuff. We talked about everything that you could imagine. And 7 years later, I get this email about wanting to reconnect. And it was amazing. And so much had changed in this person's life. And he wrote things in this email about what I had done for him all these years ago. The believability factor, I don't like hearing stuff like that. But I receive it because what he said was true of our journey together. I watched him grow. I watched him change into a young man we were at their wedding. It was just wonderful to look back. But you'll have an opportunity to do that with some people because you'll have time to invest in them. Others, it's just chance encounters sometimes that your words matter and can change someone's life. The motivation of Jesus' conversation with a Samaritan woman was for life change. It wasn't just to give her information. In John chapter 4, beginning with verse 10, Jesus replied, "If you only knew the gift God has for you and who you are speaking to, you would ask me, and I would give you living water. Anyone who drinks this water will soon become thirsty again, but those who drink the water that I give will never be thirsty again. It becomes a fresh, bubbling spring within them, giving them eternal life." Life change. People would say, my life has been changed by all kinds of things. Most of it is external. Some of it is internal. A lot of it doesn't last. God changes us from the inside out, from our core, and he just doesn't give us a different kind of life. He gives us a new life, a life that changes who we are. Note that Jesus was intentional. He cared enough about this stranger, this foreigner, this person that really was despised in Jewish eyes, considered a half-breed, Samaritans were, but he recognized the value of her enough because she, like us, are stamped in God's image, and he initiated a conversation because he cared. We communicate for life change because it makes a difference. It helps our children to become responsible adults. The good thing about that is we can do all that we can. How they come out is their choice as they unpack what they've learned. It could prevent us or an employee from having an accident. It could motivate someone to hone a skill into effectiveness and success. It could lead to a healthier and more balanced life. Motivation matters. Why you do what you do in your conversation and your speech matters. Second ingredient in good conversation is the content. This is what we communicate. It's the substance, the words that you use to make your point, if you have a point. There are many times in our lives we talk with people and there's no point. You know what I'm saying? What we're talking about really doesn't matter. It doesn't lead to depth. It doesn't give life. It's not inspiring. It's just the same old, and we go away thinking, that was nice. We talked about the weather in Florida. We talked about how I can hear my truck rusting and all those things. But we don't get to the stuff about real living and life. That's when change starts to happen with people. The content should give the needed reason or rationale that could actually lead to some kind of a life change. I started practicing something that I'm not regretting doing it, but my accountability partner and I call him my Proverbs iron sharpens iron buddy, he took the initiative, and I thought this was a great idea. We're kind of holding each other accountable with our health and exercise and taking care of ourselves. And we have very specific things on paper that we're doing, and we're tracking it, and we will ask ourselves, I'll hear these questions tomorrow morning from my friend, have you done this and this and this and this? And it's okay to say no, but I can't make an excuse. But I'm excited to tell them that I have. And it matters. So we don't like just talking superficial. We want to talk about life. And how are you doing? Don't lie to me. Tell me the truth. So note that Jesus was strategic. He knew enough to shape the conversation. Even though that they weren't on the same page, Jesus and this Samaritan woman, Jesus was able to insert content that could change this woman's life, depending on her response. So Jesus talked and taught her about four different things, as I summarize them in John chapter 4. The meaning of living water, the connection with her story related to living water, the significance of worship, and the talk of his identity, who he was. What we talk with people about eventually should lead to something that really matters. I'm not saying superficial is wrong. I think entry-level conversations sometimes are very, very necessary to strike up a conversation, to find something that we have in common that would take us somewhere. So that when we communicate, so I would say it this way, that we communicate is assumed. Why we communicate is important. How we communicate is paramount. Paramount. So this is the third ingredient of good conversation, the method, the how of we of how we communicate. The way you communicate gives you credibility and strength to the content that could lead to life change if people choose to listen to what you're saying, if it's that helpful to them. Here's my summary of how Jesus communicated with the Samaritan woman. Kind of three categories, I would say. First of all, he communicated with acceptance and respect. Acceptance and respect. Jesus simply asked this woman, would you give me a drink of water? Would you give me a drink of water? The woman was surprised, verse 9 of John chapter 4 says, for Jews refused to have anything to do with Samaritans. They just hated them. They couldn't stand to be near them. And here Jesus is. Not only was it a woman, which was stigmatized in that day, but she was also a Samaritan. So you've got this very challenging circumstance that Jesus has absolutely no problem with. So in asking her for water, Jesus validates her worth and her dignity, and not just as a person, but as a woman in a culture where men avoided contact with women even in public. You just didn't do that. And don't go into Samaria, go around Samaria. And in fact, as you read through the Gospels, you'll find many times when people are going different places, the Jews are going certain places, they will avoid Samaria. They will go around because of who they saw those people as being. If you speak with acceptance and respect, it will lead to understanding, and it will go far in your relating to other people. Another category, Jesus also communicated with interest in care. It wasn't just up here. It wasn't just intellectual stuff. It was heart stuff. We could say that Jesus was the best active listener alive who has ever lived. He could read between the lines and discern the message under the words. He brought depth to the conversation with this woman, and he made it intensely, intensely personal. You may remember he asked her, where is your husband? Why don't you bring your husband here, and we'll talk. And you may remember the response. She says, I have no husband. He says, you're correct. You've had five husbands, and the man you're living with now isn't your husband. And he wasn't blaming. He wasn't shaming. This is almost, to flip it over from the traditional understanding, more about the husband's ability to divorce a wife because of any simple thing that he doesn't like about her, more than it is about an immoral woman going from man to man to man. Chances are greater that the husband just see, which is typical in a lot of cultures in those days, they're just throwaways. I don't like her, I'll get another one. So she had risked for the sixth time starting another relationship with another man. So he's just bringing this up because he cares. This is a woman that's probably been rejected five times. Would you want to keep trying to find another relationship? So he broaches that subject. He cares about this woman, but he has interest and he cares. It's not just something negative that's happening here. There's another way that he communicated, and that was with directness and with grace. Jesus never talked in circles, never beat around the bush. He always aimed at the heart of the issue. But no matter how different or difficult the conversation may have been with this woman or for this woman, because this was about life change, because Jesus saw something more than immediate circumstances, there was always a thread of grace woven into his conversation, always. He always saw what someone could become if they knew the life that he provided and would embrace it. There are a lot of other important elements needed and necessary when we communicate, like attitude and kindness, body language, tone, authenticity, and all of that. But nothing tops grace. Nothing tops language that tells someone that you're talking to that they matter, regardless of what they've done. We've had so many conversations with our kids growing up that communicated that very thing. I don't care what you do. Don't care how bad it is. Don't care anything. What matters is your mother and father love you, and this door is always, always, always open, regardless. And we said it again and again and again and again. They know that there's grace at home. Now, there's certainly always consequences and implications and everything else to decisions that children make, but they know their stand of their parents in relation to our journey with them. So if we're going to communicate well, if we're going to have more understanding in our communication, then the what and the how of our communication need to be sprinkled with grace. Sprinkled with grace. These words of Jesus, about Jesus in John chapter 1, verse 14 and 16 and 17. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, glory as of the only begotten from the Father, full of grace and truth. For of his fullness we have all received, and grace upon grace. Not, as some translations would say, grace leading to grace, but the images of just grace piled on grace and piled on grace comes from Jesus to the people he loves, to the people that would receive it. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth were realized or experienced through Jesus Christ. In Luke chapter 4, includes the 40 days of temptation. It includes Jesus in the temple reading from Isaiah 61 about who he is. And at the end of the reading, he rolls up the scroll, gives it back to the attendant, and sits down. And then we read these words. Everyone spoke well of him and was amazed at the gracious words that came from his lips. You have people in your life, maybe, that have a really hard time having conversation with you, and it could be mutual. What an amazing opportunity to test something and to try something. What if your approach was that they would experience grace by how you talk to them, by your understanding, by maybe ceasing the endless talk about ourselves and being curious about them, and affirming them, doing everything we can, as hard as it can be, to find one little thing that we can affirm them for, as opposed to just thinking of all the bad that we find, being gracious. So Jesus was intentional, and Jesus was strategic, but Jesus was also sensitive. In the midst of a conversation, it seems, although it could find a natural conclusion, Jesus was aware enough to conclude the conversation. It was right at the time the disciples showed up with lunch. And they are astounded. Actually, they're speechless that he's talking to a woman, let alone a Samaritan woman. So they don't even say anything. They're so messed with this picture. So I'm going to ask you, how do you contribute to greater understanding in your communication with other people? Are you clear on your motivation, the why of your talking? Do you realize how important the content is, the what of what you're saying? And is your method of communication effective, the how of what you do? Paul said in Colossians 4:6, let your conversation be gracious and attractive so that you will have the right response for everyone. Healthy communication, that which results in understanding and clarity, is one of the greatest tools for strengthening our relationships. So what was the result of life change in Jesus' conversation? The woman's life had very genuinely changed. By the time they were done and interrupted by the disciples, she had already left her water jar behind and headed straight for town. Straight for town. Nobody goes back. And by the way, she's drawing water in the middle of the day, which you didn't do. You did that in the evening because she didn't want to be centered out. She didn't want to hang around other people because there was so much stigma because of her life. So she, because of what Jesus, the effect Jesus had on her life, heads right back to town. I think God very powerfully changed her heart. And it wasn't much later where almost everybody in town heads out to where Jesus is. And if you want to finish the chapter, you find out at the end that they tell the woman, "It's we believe in Jesus, not because what you said, but because we've heard it ourselves. We've seen it ourselves." So other people were changed in the community because this lady's life was changed because of how Jesus communicated with her. Last year, I got this this card. When it comes laminated, it makes me nervous. Wanda gave me this. Actually, she gave a copy to each of our kids. She brought extras. She was at a ladies' night. Don't know what they were doing. Don't know what they were talking about. Don't know what the subject was. All I know is she brought these home. And it says, before you speak, think. And I thought, this isn't good. And I thought, I'm going to probably have to come up with a new vocabulary, learn how to talk different. I felt good that she gave them to the kids too, but then she put hers on the fridge, which to me, that's also for me. So I got two of them. And it's still there. And it's in your notes. Before you speak, think. And this is like the application. This is your takeaway. I'm not giving you this because I need this. Because I need these reminders. And obviously you're not going to be legalistic about this, and every time you open your mouth, oh, I got to stop and read this, I got to think this. But there are times in your life when you're going to need to stop, and you really need to think about what you're going to say, because what matters, it really is going to matter next, the outcome. Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? This one annoys me. Is it necessary? I kind of think every time I talk it's probably necessary, but Wanda doesn't think so. And is it kind? Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? Is it kind? You could add your own list. The point is, you and I can do a lot to help have more understanding in our relationships and in our communication. And it matters how we do that. And I pray on your journey and the decisions that you need to make, the way you talk or are aware, or as other people are saying things, or what you think they're not getting. Take steps toward greater understanding in your communication, just like every day adding another piece to the puzzle that brings clarity. Father, thank you for this day. Jesus, thank you for doing what we would have such a hard time doing, stepping out of a box of culture that would be scary to us, but you talking to a despised woman culturally and engaging her in such a way that it brought life to her and to many people in her hometown. And I pray, God, that we would be able to be inspiring to others as well in the way we talk. May our words, may our attitude, may everything about us when we engage people in conversation breathe life into them. And God, would you use what we do, what we say, and how we say it to bring life change that you would bring through us. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.